Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we have a continuation of last week's show, which was dealing with how metaphysics and physics helps to really explain all of our universe and what might be missing actually in the world of physics, that metaphysics, of course, helps to fill in. I will kind of go over a little bit of what I said last week, because I realize that some of you out there may not have caught last week's show, or even if you did, it's always good to hear, you know, something to remind you of what was covered. And in addition to that, I hope that tonight we'll be able to complete the subject, but if I can't, I could keep going, you know. But at any rate, I think we're going to make a stab at it and see how far we can get. And to begin with, let me also mention, if you would like to call in, you can. Yes, while I'm on the air, you can reach me at 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S. Now, if you're in Canada, try 888-815-9756. Be glad to hear from you. Anything that you want to talk about that deals with metaphysics or spirituality, hey, that's what I'm here for. And that's what other people are listening to. So if you think you have something you want to add or have a question or whatever, please call in. I'm available. Also, for those of you who would like to reach me anytime, you can do so at thoughts@whylifeis.com. I just thought I'd mention that. And some of you have been emailing me. I appreciate that. That's wonderful. If I don't get back to you right away, I will try to send some kind of reply. But I really appreciate that, and thank you so much for doing it, because I like to hear from you. Okay, so last week we were going into some of the basics, I'll call it, of how the universe works. And one of the things that's most interesting is that, in general, if we look at physics, now this is, you know, just regular old physics, not metaphysics. Metaphysics is the physics that goes beyond science, that goes beyond normal physics, and tries to explain things that cannot be necessarily proven at this time, in some cases. Now, there's a blurring, I want you to understand that, between these two, because in the last 10 years particularly, especially, physics and metaphysics have grown peculiarly close in many ways. There are some physicists that find that disturbing, and maybe there's some metaphysicists that find that disturbing. I don't. I find it wonderful. But there has been this sort of nexus that they've been growing towards, and I think the nexus, really, the best way to describe it is God. Yeah, they've been growing towards God, and that's a good thing. That's a wonderful thing, but for those who have some issues about that, well, keep listening. And, of course, you can always call in and address them here. That's what we're here for. All right, so last week, one of the areas that I covered was that in physics, the reality is that basically the universe is composed of energy and, we'll call it very dense energy and matter. And this energy is controlled by certain, we'll call it laws, that affect it. But no one in physics really has an understanding of where the laws come from. They just are there, you might say. And over time, the laws have changed. Going way back in time, to like the 17th century, the laws were defined by Newton, Isaac Newton, who basically came up with what is known as a model of, we'll say, linear thinking, which is good, and when applied in an engineering sense, is very effective for describing the world that we interact with on a normal basis every day. The problem was that this kind of thinking, which had very hard and fast laws, described a universe in which everything in it could be figured out simply by math. You know, okay, 2 plus 2 equals 4, 5 times 4 equals 20, that kind of thing. And so this was the basic model that Newton used, is if you can compute it, you can describe it, and if you can describe it, then it must exist, and if you can't compute it, then he had trouble. That doesn't mean he himself, in a personal sense, believed that math explained everything. Quite the opposite. Those who have been studying his life and some of his more personal diaries and notes, etc., have discovered that he thought just the opposite, actually, that math only went so far in that one would have to understand God to truly understand the universe. I know that may strike you as odd. The guy who creates a physics that is used for several hundred years, and is still used today, actually, but it's almost exclusively for several hundred years as being like the physics, which is based almost exclusively on mathematics, really believe that, you know what? It works, but it doesn't really work. It works enough to so that we can make things and design things to help us in our world, but it doesn't really work as far as explaining the real universe. Only sort of a facade made out of mathematical designs. Most interesting, I know that some people will find that difficult to understand, but it is true. If you read the biographies that are being written about Newton today, based upon some of his more private moments, this is what the man believed. And I think it even affected his personal life. This is just my own thought about this, because he was kind of a quirky guy who mostly kept to himself. And I think he was troubled by the fact that, on the one end, he was a genius in mathematics and created almost all the math as well as the physics that, you know, explained how the mechanics of the universe works. But at the same time, he knew it wasn't the whole thing, but he was caught in this kind of quagmire of having discovered something that was so strong and so immediately necessary that he didn't want to upset the apple cart. But unfortunately, the apples that fell from the tree needed to be explained in a way other than just mathematically. And that was his problem. That was a nice little pun, I thought. Anyway, okay. Next to that, after that we had Einstein, which I talked a lot about last week, who came up with a whole different element of physics. Not so much as into mathematics as into concepts that could later be explained in mathematics, but came from thought experiments. Now, what is a thought experiment? A thought experiment is where you do something in your mind that can't, at least at the present time, be carried out in the physical, real kind of, what people call real anyway, world. In other words, you have to go beyond this, and it really enters into the realm of metaphysics. What Einstein was doing in his mind, which he was working as a metaphysician, and then he went to a buddy of his and said, because he wasn't real good at math. I know that sounds hard to believe, but he wasn't good at math. And he said, could you help me with the math to explain this metaphysical design I've got about how time works and then how gravity works and how all kinds of other things work in terms of physics? And luckily, his friend was able to help him out, and his wife as well. That between the two of them, they were able to create a mathematical model that he himself had a lot of trouble with, but eventually he could figure out the model himself, even though he wasn't exactly the creator of the math. He was the creator of the concepts. A lot of people don't know that. I know it sounds strange. Everybody says, well, wasn't he super genius? Why didn't he know all the math? Well, actually, you know, Einstein was sort of like the other side of Newton that Newton kept to himself. Very interesting. Okay, so then we moved on, and it turns out that there kept being this thing that came up in terms of physics that was basically, the best way to describe it, spirit. What is spirit? Spirit is the thought of our Creator, of God. The thought of God kept coming in to physics, and everybody wanted to, I say everybody, most physicists wanted to ignore it, and so many other people did too. And so a guy named Heisenberg worked on another fellow, Planck's mathematics, and he created some experiments to prove that basically things could exist in two different places or more in time and space, and could also be literally indefinite in either one, that there was something that was controlling very, very, very small amounts of energy. And what it seemed to be after his experiments, the designs of the experiments he ran and some other people did, was thought itself. Well, that certainly changed things, because if thought changes things, then thought may create things, and the thought of something, like a great being, such as God, could create an entire universe. Well, that really does change things. And as a matter of fact, the entire physics movement of the 1920s ended up creating in the early 30s existentialism and other types of philosophies that suggested that there was an indefiniteness to existence. Now, I'm not saying that there actually is, by the way. It was the conclusion of some philosophers that if the world can be randomly controlled by thought, then there could be some kind of indefiniteness to everything. But what people didn't think about was if the original thought of our universe was created by the Creator itself, there was only so much change that anything less than God could make a change. And that's the part that kind of got lost in the overall equation, you might say. But nonetheless, existentialism philosophy became a dominant force from 1930 on because of physics. Yeah. That's a little thing, a little side note I thought I'd throw in there, just to show that I know something about philosophy. But nonetheless, no, that isn't the reason. The real reason was because it actually changed the way people think. It opened people's minds up to the idea that the universe was not exacting and mechanical as the Newtonian universe suggested. As a matter of fact, quite the opposite. Okay, so eventually we come to more modern physics, modern being like today even, and it turns out that most physicists today are into a kind of reductionist attitude regarding how the universe works. Now, what is reductionism? Well, it reduces the known phenomena that people observe to smaller and smaller events and characteristics, thinking that in some way that builds a truthful and accurate picture of the way things are. But the truth is, it does the opposite, because it confuses one to lose sight of the big picture. What is the big picture? Well, the big picture is, and it's sort of like the elephant that's in the room and nobody notices, is that no matter what part of physics today, and I'm talking about like right to the moment today, one tries to examine and look at and tries to figure out, they run head-on into an anomaly. And the anomaly, and that means like crisis in their thinking. And the crisis in their thinking is this, that there is some kind of mechanical energy relationship to what they're examining that has nothing to do with spirit, God, a creator, or any of the spiritual sides of existence that maybe doesn't even deal with the grossest elements of God. And yet, people want to believe this because they have trouble due to some religion issues, more often than not, in believing that God exists. They also have trouble with the concept of if God exists, then what created God? Those are valid questions. Believe me, they are valid questions. Interestingly, if any of you are interested further in that subject, although I will touch on it tonight, you can read Life's Hidden Meaning, and in Chapter 2, It's only like 15 pages. It isn't much to read, although they are big pages, I admit that. But I cover that subject and explain where God came from. For those of you who really need to know that, That's, and I think a lot of people do. It's okay. That is in there. The answers are there, really. Okay, but getting back to this quagmire. Okay, we got a problem because in physics today, the desire is to make everything, and it's not just today, this has been going on for a long time, the desire is to make everything sort of a random process based upon the quirkiness of energy and possibly some kind of laws that no one or nothing created, which is a little bit of a we'll say contradiction, but nonetheless, laws that nobody created, but they exist somehow, and that these energies follow in various ways, including through particles and waves and other events, and that all this is coming about because it just happened that way. That's where we're at today. Just randomly happens that out of a trillion, trillion, trillion possibilities, our universe happens to work exactly the way it does, and if you move one little iota of this universe and these laws or change them in just virtually any small of the smallest ways, the entire universe collapses and disappears from existence. Yep. Okay. And if you believe that one, there's a lot of other things I would like to tell you about that I could sell you, and you'll probably buy them. How about some magic dust or something else like that? Well, we'll get to all that when we come back. And I hope I brought you up to speed. I took a totally different approach in explaining last week, but believe it or not, I did cover the same subject because I like to do it that way. And we'll be back in approximately 2 to 2.5 minutes. We've tried to cut these commercials as short as possible. Yes, we're trimming them down so I can yak more. And you can, too, if you want to call in. We'll be back in 2 minutes or so.
What book are you reading?
It's a novel. Kind of. About romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Well, we're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Yes, tonight we're speaking about, of course, metaphysics and spirituality, but it's about how the whole universe possibly is affected by physics and metaphysics, and how the whole shebang works. Hopefully, I'm going to cover the subject well enough so people can say, well, I got some ideas about what this guy's talking about. All right, so where are we then? If the present-day physics is trying to explain how the universe works by eliminating two-thirds of what the Creator exists as. One-third is about this energy and how activity affects other activity and how things interrelate that we call life. It's an interesting process, but that's only one third. You've got to have the other two thirds, which is spirit that has to enter into a relationship with energy or form in order to create life. Yes, I covered that last week too. But I'm saying it a little differently this week so that people won't be hopefully interested in it. And so you see, that's what it's about. You've got to look at the whole picture. And the present physics model doesn't. What about metaphysics? But metaphysics is kind of very interesting because there are some metaphysicians, myself kind of being included in that, but not really, I don't think, but there's some metaphysicians that want to almost exclusively deal only with the spiritual side of things and not deal with anything that's in the physics side of things, meaning that they exclude one-third of the Creator's mind in process as the universe exists. Instead of looking at the form and energy of things and understanding how that joins with spirit, they just want to look at the spirit. And so metaphysics has become predominantly affected by spiritual thought and not enough of the quote-unquote science, which it isn't pure science anyway, of physics has entered in. So these two kind of dance around each other, but they don't really join together. But life joins them together. Life is based upon the necessity of spirit to become enjoined and part of form in order to create the life, in order to grow what? To grow the Creator that creates the whole thing. Now, I'm saying that the Creator, or God, is not a perfect being that exists in a realm in which it does not change. No, that is not my definition of God. It may be yours, and it's okay. If you believe that, that's fine. But what I'm saying is that God is a being of greatness beyond anything that any other part of life that it has helped to create exists within. But the problem is that God also is a entity, we'll call it that, of growth. It seeks to be more, always, just as the life that it helps to create does the same. We're mirroring it. We're also part of it, and we're helping to grow it. Does that mean God does not exist? Quite the opposite. It means God is everywhere existent. God has a tremendous effect on everything. And God can even make some, within its own choices, changes, even in the realities that we exist within. So I am not saying that God is, in a deist sense, that's a special kind of a thought process or religion, a being that created everything and just sort of left or watches idly by while we do. No, I believe he's just the opposite. I'm telling you my belief now. Can I prove this? Sort of. But it takes too long to do in a show like this. But yeah, there's a number of ways to explain it. And maybe by even the end of today's show, there'll be inklings of why this is the case. So the God I'm talking about, the God I'm explaining about, is a God that wants freedom of thought, because thought is a way of self-creation. But it, at the same time, is participating, interactively even, in the process we call growth and life and development. Now, the way it participates is on such a large scale that it doesn't inhibit, it doesn't change for the most part, the very small scales that most life exists within, such as us. The good news is that we are pretty much free within the choices we can have any control over to make our life the way we want it. However, there are times when it's possible to even enlist the aid of God or some part of God that is less than God but greater by far than we are to help us and to even be of some, in a prayer sense, some great assistance. Obviously, this is not a God that is absent. It's not a God that is uninterested. It's a God that's amazingly interested in all of its creations. At the same time, it is recognizing our right to co-create with it if we choose to, and to choose not to, and to become greater than we are, to grow into something indefinitely greater and greater. Well, it grows exponentially because all of its parts are growing it faster than any one of its parts are growing. So God's got kind of a good side of things because it's growing with the enormity of all life, whereas life itself, of course, grows mostly from its own endeavors. This is an interesting theory, and it's important to understand that when incorporated within the model of physics, instead of denuding physics and creating a physics that falls apart, it does exactly the opposite. It takes physics and it makes it something that can be applied and used in a way that further explains how the universe works without the severe levels of contradiction that presently are, not only exist but are growing in the area of physics. Since 1998, particularly, the entire field of physics has been growing more and more disparate and contradictory and having a tremendously difficult time literally holding itself together. There's a new theory almost daily because every theory that is developed without spirit involved in it comes crashing into some problem. I know that if you're not following physics, you may not realize that, but that's what's going on. And it's because this need on the part of many physicists, many scientists, to ignore spirit. So I'm saying, hey, you can't ignore it because it's right there, the elephant's in the room, and it's right there, and you can't get rid of it. Not only can you not get rid of it, but as long as you ignore it, you're going to end up confusing yourself and others and creating conflicts in yourself and others. All right, so let's talk about some of the areas in physics that could be helped and how they can be helped by adding spirit into the equation. Yes, and it can be done mathematically, by the way. We are offering a grant. I'm just letting you know this. We are offering a grant to a person who is involved with the general area of physics. It could be cosmology, astrophysics, some forms of mathematics, various types of physics that allows that person who is studying in this area, who either has a PhD or is presently working on a PhD, to make a mathematical model using the specific areas that I have written about in various articles and papers, and some of it's in Life's Hidden Meaning as well. And of course, they'll be in contact with me as an author. And I make no comments. I make no statements about my area of expertise in this field or any other field for that matter involved with what I teach. You should be aware of that because I'm not saying that this person will have less credentials than I have because I make no statements about any credentials. But what this grant does is it gives that person the opportunity to live somewhat on the ground, to say, and to create a mathematics that will support these theories in metaphysics and physics together that need to be joined. And so if you know someone or if you yourself are interested, hey, go to our website, agelesswisdomfoundation.org. Yeah. And if you go there, what you'll find is information on how to participate in the grant process. Now, it's not going to be easy. We're not trying to make it hard, but it's not going to be easy to do this. And so there is a whole process involved in applying for the grant. And eventually people will have to prove that they have the ability to be able to participate in receiving the funds. And so it's not an insignificant amount of money either. So please check it out. Now, I will move ahead and tell you about some of the areas in physics that would be greatly helped right now. There's a thing called string theory. Okay, what is string theory? String theory talks about, and I talked about this last week, about there being vibrations. You know, I'm feeling those good vibrations. Yeah, well, actually it talks about the vibrations of the universe. And these vibrations exist in multi-dimensions, but the dimensions themselves in most areas of string theory are minuscule dimensions, very, very, very small dimensions. And at least in the present theories, people and things don't exist there outside of the vibrations. And the vibrations affect each other. And they affect each other in ways that create universes and they create matter, energy and matter, and they do all kinds of stuff like that. Now, Very interesting, except there's a problem. And the problem is, it's the same stupid chicken and egg thing that you get in every situation when you don't have spirit involved. Well, where do the vibrations come from? Okay. And the thing that I love about these, some of these string theorists, especially the ones that are using a thing called M string theory. Yeah, it's called M, it stands for membrane, because these vibrations are like on the membranes of, think of soap bubbles or something like that. But at any rate, they like to consider that the universe being only made of energy, once you can explain where the energy comes from, you don't have to explain where the vibrations come from that created the energy. I don't think so. That doesn't convince me anyway. Somewhere you got to go back to, well, okay, who created the vibrations? And in metaphysics, an interesting thing, and this goes back to before recorded history, the vibration of God's own voice or sound or thought, depending upon what type of metaphysics you're looking at, is what created everything. Interesting point. So we're not that far away, except you just got to include the old G word there. Got to have God in there. And then you say, okay, well, aren't you then plagued by the same problem, because then who created God? And you see, this is where that chapter 2 in Life and Meaning really helps. But I'll say it in very shorthand, and if you can pick it up, that's great. And if you can't, then I'll tell you what, you go look at the book. And it's not to sell books, but it's just to say that it's too hard to explain in this short time. And that is that where God came from is this. Think of an infinite realm of possibilities. There's infinite possibilities to anything and everything in existence. Now, this is going to sound a little like parallel universes, but it isn't at all. Believe me. But for those of you who are jumping up and down, say, oh, is he talking about those parallel universes? No, I'm not. But infinite possibilities. We are within the infinite possibilities. One of the possibilities is that that entire field of infinite possibilities can develop the ability to make choices among itself and have the choices cohesively affect the entire infinite field to make a limited field from the infinite field. And the limited field becomes a being we call God. You might say, well, that kind of sounds kind of tricky. Is he slipping something by us? Not really. It's just that I'm saying it in shorthand, and so there's kind of a lot of other things and parts of it to explain. So God can come from an infinite field of possibilities that becomes in itself limited by there being limitations on choice, which we call creation, by the way. And so, and that choice, when it directs the field, becomes thought itself. Because thought is choices with a direction that limits a field. That's the definition of thought, at least one of them, and it's one of the best ones I've ever heard of. It's a great definition. And if you use that definition, you can explain where God came from. Wow. You want to know more? Go read the book. I know. There's a lot more to explain about it in depth. You really got to think about it. A lot of hard thinking to really get the full gist of it. But here's the point. Then some of the things that these string theorists are saying actually start making some sense. Now, the problem is that because they don't want to include spirit, the dimensions of time and space that they've finally come up with, by the way, they're now at the number 7. They started at 4, and then they went to eventually 10, and then finally 11, and now they're back to 7. 7 is the right number, by the way. But the interesting thing is that they can't define these dimensions because you have to have spirit involved in it. You have to have the thought of God involved in it to make the dimensions real and have something more to them than just a bunch of vibrations. Otherwise, the whole thing becomes kind of like a parody of what is real. That's unfortunate, but true. Okay, so string theory starts making some sense. Actually makes a lot of sense when you include spirit in the equation. What else starts making some sense? Well, we're not going to have time to go into it until after the next break, but I'll mention it to you right now. There's a thing called black holes and dark energy and dark matter. Those are things that can be explained, at least the effects of them, by including spirit. But if you don't have those things, if you don't have a spirit involved with those things, they don't make much sense. They start becoming confusing and contradictory and breaking the laws of physics, if you want to believe that. Also, and here's an interesting thing. Some guys won a Nobel Prize proving how the universe started. The problem is that in proving how the universe started, the universe almost certainly would have to have started going faster than the speed of light. And guess what that does? Well, that creates a real problem because a thing called the Standard Model goes up in smoke as soon as you do that. And yet they gave these people Nobel Prizes for something they didn't see what that where it was going to lead to, and it's leading to a big problem in physics today. But I'll fix it when we come back from break, because I like doing things like that. And that'll be in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for a better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. I like these shorter breaks because it gives me more time to talk to all of you. And if you want to talk to me, you can. Remember, 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S. If you're in Canada, 888-815-9756. Yeah. Okay, so here we go. This is a fascinating idea. I don't even know where to start because they're all so interesting. But a lot of people have heard about black holes. I think I'll start with that because I find it fascinating from the standpoint that there's been so much attention given to them and so little is understood about them. There's a guy named Stephen Hawking. Some people have heard of him, of course, A Brief History of Time. He wrote a great book. But he's also known because he has a terrible disease that he's fighting, and he's also come up with some great theories. But he talked about black holes, but the interesting thing is that his theories on them have still not held up completely. And interestingly, what is a black hole? Well, a black hole is an area of time and space in which the gravity of the black hole squishes the time and space to the point where time and space cannot exist as we understand it using the physics that we use today. So something is going on in a black hole that cannot be explained under normal circumstances. Normal physics just ceases to be able to explain what a black hole is. But I'm going to tell you what it is because it's not all that hard. If you want to go to Chapter 4 of Light's Hidden Meaning, I really explain it in more detail there, but that's okay. You don't have to buy the book. You can just listen to me yak about it right now. A black hole is this. Our universe is only part of a much larger universe that it exists within that is created by God. And our universe is not a multi-universe with many, many possible universes because God creates it so it's only going to be the way God wants it. That's the good news. That is a very good news. Oh, I heard a beep. That must mean that somebody's calling in. Hello. Are you there?
Hello. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Who is this?
Hey, now, this is Ralph here in California. How are you?
Hi, Ralph. I'm doing great, Ralph. How are you doing?
I am totally awesome. I was just actually listening to the Station 1. My question, thank you very much, by the way, for all you do. My question, I guess it's probably what everybody wants to know, the sense of who is God. Why should I believe that God actually exists? And isn't God actually another vehicle for control? And if you can shed some light on that.
Oh, I would love to. As a matter of fact, that's an excellent way of putting it. Shedding light on who and what God is kind of like the only answer I could give you, actually. Well, Ralph, listen, I'll tell you what. If you can stay on the line, but I'll kind of go through the explanation in as brief an order as I can, and then if you want to, you could ask any other questions you want about it.
Okay.
The best way to understand this is that God doesn't try to control us, but religions sometimes do, because religions are inventions made by human beings to try to explain how and in what ways to worship or to obey or sometimes to just be comforted by God. But the religion itself oftentimes is a manifestation of the controlling nature of human beings. God doesn't seek to control, because God recognizes that in order for there to be a growth in itself, the life that it helps to create has to be free to think for itself.
Correct.
And it has to be free to take action for itself as well.
Okay.
Both thought and action have to be within the realm of the life that God creates. So God wants us to be not within its control, but the opposite. The creators and co-creators of life with it in this universe. Now, where did God come from? I kind of touched on that. God is a being that is self-created, as all life itself is self-created. You got to understand that. We're just following in our Creator's footsteps. We create our lives. Your life, Ralph, is very different from my life, even though there may be some similarities, and I hope there are, by the way.
Okay.
But the important thing is that even though there's a unity between life, each part of life is creating a uniqueness to itself, and that uniqueness is critical in the process. God itself is becoming unique from the growth of all the life that it is involved in and with, which is everything in the universe.
Oh.
So God is growing from us.
Oh.
You like that idea, I hope.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's good.
Oh,
yeah, that's well, you got it. Well, see, you know, this is the thing, and this is the general concepts that I'm talking about are part of a philosophy that is generally referred to as ageless wisdom, but it's kind of written, of course, through my creations, because although it has been around for a long time, I'm explaining it in a more conceptual framework. But that's, regardless of that, I just want to make sure that you realize that this is the work of numerous people, too many to probably count, have been involved in creating the ideas that I espouse. But the ideas themselves may be somewhat unique because they're conceptually framed and demystified so that others can understand it maybe in today's thought process.
Does that have anything to do, I'm sorry to interrupt you,
does that have anything
to do with, you know, I've heard where people say we are one with the source. So if we are one with the source, so that basically means that we actually are the co-creators of our own existence. Based on whatever it is we think about on a regular basis.
That's it. You got it. I would say that that's an excellent way of putting it. Hopefully the rest of the listeners that are listening in are getting it too. And I appreciate your call.
Niles, thank you so much for your contributions to humanity. Thank you. God bless.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, so let's go further. And thank you, Ralph, for helping us to get it out and let people understand it. All right, so we have a thing called these black holes. What are they doing? What are they doing out there, if anything? Well, there's two different classes. There's a class that kind of works on sucking in a whole bunch of, we'll call it, used energy that is clogging up galaxies. And this is... these kind of black holes are called super black holes, and they literally take the energy out of galaxies, and some of the energy has not even been fully discovered yet by humans, and they transfer this energy into other dimensions of time and space. Four other ones that are major dimensions besides the one we're in. They do it through a total of 5 dimensions of time and space. And they keep a balance to the growth rate of the universe. If they didn't do this, the universe would either grow too slowly or too quickly in terms of time and space. And you might say, well, what's that about? Well, the problem is right now in physics, there's no way to explain what's going on in terms of the rate of growth of our universe. It seems to be growing at an expanding rate, but it seems to go a little faster and a little slower, and nobody seems to understand how or why, and it has to do with the way these super black holes are working, along with some other elements in physics. So the super black holes are very important because they do it on a galactic basis. But then there's these smaller black holes that are just like suns, like our sun is, that eventually stars that eventually collapse on themselves. And they're they're millions of times smaller than a super black hole. And what they do is they transfer energy to one or two or three of the dimensions of time and space, but not all four of the ones greater than this one. And they transfer much less energy, and they balance out just parts of galaxies. And the interesting thing about super black holes is they affect the distance of time and space between galaxies as much as they affect what's going on inside a galaxy. Whereas in terms of a regular black hole, it affects mostly what's going on in a neighborhood of a galaxy and not almost anything outside of that galaxy or between galaxies. Now, this is very important stuff I just told you because it explains what a black hole really is doing. And I guarantee you that you will not find a physicist around that has done a mathematical study on this, because the present models have ignored the fact that there are other dimensions of time and space that are even greater in dimensionality and size than the one we exist in that are still part of our universe. So instead they say it's going to a different universe, or it's going to another part of what we call our universe here, which is really just the etheric physical part of our universe. And so you get a lot of confusion. So this is another area of metaphysics that has not yet been explained carefully enough in physics, and that is that there are multiple dimensions of time and space that human beings and a lot of other parts of life live in, and they exist in even simultaneous to this universe, but it isn't like a separate universe, like a parallel universe. It's just that we have energy relationships in our bodies that exist in these other universes. And when we die, these other dimensions of time and space, and when we die from this dimension, we actually travel to one of the other dimensions. But you don't have to wait to die. Every time you go to sleep at night, for most people, they travel to these other dimensions, some of them, a couple of them, of time and space, and spend some time dreaming there. Yeah. Didn't know that? Well, again, pick up Life's Admitting, read Chapter 8, and there you go. Chapter 8's like a whole book in itself. It's huge. It could take you a month to read Chapter 8 or more. But the point is that it explains what these other dimensions of time and space are like, and it goes through the physics, and it explains the time and space differences and models, explains how energy changes. It's really interesting, and it does so in a kind of descriptive way, which is easier than the chapter 10, say, which is really about physics. That chapter explains the same thing, but it does it more mathematically and more in physics, and it's a little harder for some people to understand, unless you're a physicist, and then you might like chapter 10. But the interesting thing here is that here is a physics problem that can be solved by understanding it in terms of God, because what is God doing? God is creating a 7-dimension time and space where 5 of the dimensions have actual energy in them. 2 of them do not. The highest, we'll call highest, the biggest, the greatest dimensionality of God doesn't have energy in it anymore. It only has intelligent activity, which is a little hard to explain in this shorter time. But amazingly, these other dimensions of time and space are places where people and beyond people, even beings greater than people, live. They live there. And they know that the universe is part of their existence and vice versa. And no, it's not a parallel universe where goofy things are going on every second and a change from one point to another. No, no, it's not that, because then the universe would be completely ridiculous. Nothing would make any sense if you have those kinds of things going on. God certainly wouldn't be needed either, unfortunately, because it would be a random craziness to everything. Luckily, that isn't the way it does work. But let me go on and explain some other physics phenomena so that you can enjoy the metaphysics and physics of how we can explain how the entire universe works. Okay, well then, was there a Big Bang? And if there was a Big Bang, it was at the beginning of our universe, and where is the universe going to end, and how is it going to all work out? And so, let me see if I can do it in the next 3 or 4 minutes for you. All right, here's how it works. We are in the basement. Think of the etheric physical part of the universe, which is what we call our universe, as being the basement. It's where energy becomes so dense that some of it becomes matter. Yeah. And, there's a thing called the Bolton-Higgs effect, which supposedly takes energy and converts some of it into matter. They actually discovered this thing. They're trying to prove it exists. But in reality, this Bolton-Higgs effect is really nothing more than the thought of God, along with other beings that are really very, very advanced from human beings, changing what we call the relationship of energy to thought. And by changing the relationship of energy to thought, this is what eventually they're going to find out what this Bolton-Higgs effect is. By changing the relationship, they can make new dimensions of time and space, where the speed of light changes, and all other kinds of laws of physics completely change. A thing called the alpha constant, which is the main basic constant that's used in physics. This is the thing that you use normally whenever you're doing almost any kind of work in physics these days. That changes. And so everything else changes. The laws of physics change, but they are consistent within the time and space of these other dimensions. So there's consistency, but only in a part of the universe, and then there's change. And why do you have this? Because these other dimensions of time and space that are greater than the basement where we are much more complex, and they allow people, they allow life, they allow everything that exists there to be more creative than it could be here. What causes our lack of creation here is the excessive amounts of gravity and a thing called inertia. And because energy is so crunched together, and it actually becomes intractable and very difficult. And due to that effect, the form part that spirit has to inhabit is resistant to change, and it makes it most difficult to live here in comparison to the other realms. We don't live here very long because it's so difficult. But it's a place that God wanted to create life in, making it the most challenging of all places. This is the wonder of God, to make a place like this one, which we only live here for maybe the most 100 years, 110, or whatever. Many people, of course, don't live even to 80 of the years. And so though that short of a period of time allows us to be an attempt to be as creative as possible in the most difficult places and to wear the form side, our bodies out, very quickly and then to move on to a much easier dimension, time, and space to live in. This is the process that God decided upon. There's got to be some place that's most difficult, and we're in it right now. And it's very difficult for us to understand it because we're in illusion. This is the process that we're in. Now, maybe I'll go deeper into this next week. I'm going to think about it. Maybe I'll have a volume 3 next week. It'll be, after Christmas. I might cover some things about that too. But I just want to let you know that on Sunday, this coming Sunday, for those of you who are in the Boston, Massachusetts area, Norfolk, and Providence, Rhode Island, whatever, if you tune to 1170 a.m. between 4 and 5 p.m. Eastern Time, you can listen to a show I've done on love in spiritual relationships. Yes, you can listen. And if you want to, anywhere that you have the Internet, you can go to WDISAM.com, and you can listen to the show over the Internet. Please tune in because it's another subject different from this one, and you get a chance to hear me a second time for the week. That's right. And I just want to also mention that, let's see, On January 7th, one of the members of the spiritual group that I am a member of will be talking about overcoming fear over at Glendale Borders. Will I drop in? Maybe. Hey, if enough of you email me or whatever and say, hey, I'm going to be there, then please do. Now, this is Glendale Borders, not in California, but in Phoenix, Arizona, because that's where I'm talking to you from. I know a lot of listeners are in California, but they're all over the world. But it's not Glendale, California. It's Glendale, Arizona. Yeah, it can confuse people, I know. All right, so for today's show, let's sum it up this way. And again, we may revisit this subject even more next week because I got a lot more to talk about. If we're thinking about trying to understand how physics works, we have to include spiritual thought. We have to include spiritual action. We have to include God. If you really want to understand the universe, there's no other way around it. Now, can I explain it all in 50-some-odd minutes on the air? Probably not, and probably not even in 20 shows. But I can explain enough so it gets you started. And if you want to read more, you can in books I've written or other people. Also, I've written hundreds of articles, so that may be of some help for a few of you out there as well. At any rate, the basic concept is that without including spirit, we cannot join metaphysics and physics together. It is critical that that component be brought into the equation. Otherwise, there won't be an equation that will ever work, unfortunately. Well, I hope this has been helpful. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.